Welcome back to another episode of the 10 Minute Break Podcast. How you doing, Sinan?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm feeling amazing. I'm ready for the next episode.
Yeah, episode 6 of season 5. And we got a big episode here today.
A lot of big names coming up.
Right. So yeah, let's just get into the rundown. I'll start it off with Pulse's Puns. You guys love that segment, so right, of course we're bringing it back.
Want to be a nice lighthearted move starting off the episode.
Yeah.
After that, we got This Week at Jesuit with our student spotlight being Spencer Linowska.
Yeah, can't wait for that interview. That one's going to be fun. And then we got top three. Can't wait to show Jeremy what our top three is for today. And then
we got an interview with the big dog himself, Mr. Kernian.
Yeah, that is probably our biggest name that's going to be on the podcast.
Yeah, so, I mean, I've been highly anticipating this one since the start.
Right. So, yeah, we built up our way. And now
we're at the highlights, all the fame.
We got the big.
He's finally ready to come down and grace us.
Yeah. Before he leaves us, finally, we're going to get a chance to interview him. So that'll be fun.
But before we start off the episode, I want to maybe give a sneak peek into the next interview or the next episode. So I think it's going to be someone a bit blue.
What do you mean by that, Jim?
Maybe someone with a little bit of avian technology.
Are you talking about Jason?
I'm not saying any big names yet, but I'm just throwing it out there.
All right.
If anyone has any suggestions of, you know, if they want to ask something to Big Blue, go over to the www.thebluejay.news. Go on to this week's podcast episode, and there should be a comment section. So if you have a question you want to ask, I'm not going to say anything, but I think it's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
Make sure to write that in the comment section, and we'll make sure to ask them.
Yeah, go and do that. So, yeah, we can feature your questions here on the podcast. So, yeah, hope you guys enjoyed this episode. So, let's get into Pulse's Puns.
Welcome back, Father Pulse.
Welcome back, boys. Thanks for having me back.
How we doing?
It's great. It's Mardi Gras season.
Yep. You excited?
I'm excited. Great time for some good laughs, some good puns. You know, one of the parades, Bacchus. They use Bacchus in all of their temporary their major floats. You know, so it's like the Bacchusaurus. You know, like Stegosaurus with Bacchusaurus. you know, Bacamore, like. You know, so I feel like it's a perfect season to do some puns.
Right, yeah. I'm ready to get some laughs.
Yeah, everyone's been talking about last episode.
Yeah,
jokes.
Oh, man.
We're currently 1-for-2 on the laugh meters.
I know.
Let's see if we can continue the streak. Or
listeners, we pick right back up where we got Ice Rink laughing, so it was great. I love it. all right, so some new puns for this month. All right, let me think. You know, I'm really nervous for my calendar. Its days are numbered.
That's cool.
Okay, I get it, because like 1, 2, like, you know, the days and stuff.
Yeah.
All right. You know, this fish ran into a wall and said, "Damn."
Because the
dams, exactly.
A lot of water.
Underwater walls are dams.
Okay.
But it's funny because it's okay. I always wonder what kind of fish it is. You ever wonder about that?
No, not necessarily.
Everyone assumes it's a goldfish. let's see. This one's an oldie but a goodie. You know, why do seagulls fly over the sea?
What was that?
Because if they flew over the bay, they'd be bagels.
Yeah. at least someone's laughing.
Yeah, someone's
there
laughing.
There it is.
So, Father, do you like bagels?
I do.
Yeah.
Everything bagels.
Everything bagels?
Oh, yeah.
What about seagulls?
Never had one. But I wonder if... okay. See what you did there. Nice. That's funny. Okay. So there's a couple ones.
I got one.
Okay.
I want to spice things up.
Please.
What's a tree's favorite drink?
I don't know.
Root beer.
I like it.
Huh?
I like it.
All right. Like I got it. Jeremy's jokes. Pulse's puns.
So oh, yes.
Okay.
It's not Europe. Give me a pun.
Oh, me?
Yeah.
Yeah, on the spot.
That is a hard one, actually. I just blinked out.
Not funny. That wasn't a funny joke.
Okay, Jeremy.
You know, I don't trust trees. They're a little shady.
Why do birds fly south for the winter?
I don't know.
Because it's easier than walking.
See, that's what I'm talking about. Yes.
Yeah, I got a little father pulse side
of me. I guess I haven't unlocked that part of me yet.
Everyone's got a little pun in them.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You have to have something, Sinan.
Now I can't think of one.
Hey, if two vegans get into a fight, do they have beef?
That's a good one.
Okay.
Yeah. By the way, listeners, that counts as a Jeremy Rink laugh. The laugh meter.
I like that. Yeah, we'll continue our streak then.
Yeah. There, finally. Well, thank you, Father, for coming on.
It's good to be with you all. Have a great and happy, safe Mardi Gras.
Yeah.
See you on the flip side.
Welcome to This Week at Jesuit, huh?
Yeah, let's get into it. We got a very exciting time.
It's been a very eventful week or two or so since the last episode. Let's start with our first official big news. We had the skull of St. John de Babe Ruff.
That was really cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, why don't you tell us about it? You had first-hand experience looking at it.
So yeah, during religion class, we just headed down to the chapel, and I didn't know what to expect. You know, I heard it was a skull, but I didn't know how it was going to be presented. It was pretty cool. It was on a little table, mm-hmm. and it had some stuff around it. It was encased in glass, but you could see it very clearly. And yeah, the priest there, he gave a little rundown of his life and who he was. And everyone went and prayed.
It turned out to be a pretty cool saint, huh? One of the North American martyrs came in from Europe to try to convert the native people of America.
Yeah.
Obviously had to go through a lot of pain and toils and troubles.
Too much.
Too much.
Yeah.
But he kept his faith to God, and you know, he eventually.
Now he's being celebrated.
So yeah. Yeah.
So yeah, it was cool to see, and everyone going to.
True, because you always hear these stories about these crazy saints that do these amazing things, and you kind of think of them as like myths and legends.
Yeah.
But like it's kind of like grounded.
Yeah.
You know, being able to see like someone who's actually there.
Right, and they had like a little like I don't know if it was like an AI or like some like interpretation of like what they think he looked like. Like a little painting. So that was cool. Yeah, overall, it's a cool experience. I'm glad Jesuit got the opportunity, you know, to get the skull over here. So, yeah.
And also, with eventful week at Jesuit, we have the wrestling and soccer state championships.
Wow, like back, like it's like, felt like back to back. Like, it's crazy how it's like worked out. And congratulations to the wrestling team and the soccer team. And that was electric, the soccer game.
Oh, yeah.
That ending.
The final goal.
Yeah, because it was like overtime. They were like, I think, I don't remember how much time was left over.
It was double overtime, right?
Yeah.
And then it went into the first golden goal.
Yeah, before they went into PKs.
Mm-hmm.
And it was just, wow, what a kick, what a header. And the celebration was amazing, how the lights were flickering. I'm just really proud of like everyone on the team and the coaches.
I'm sure it was an electric feeling of being there in that stadium that night.
Yeah, we want to shout out Donnie for scoring that goal and Larson for winning MVP of the game. Because great defense stepped up to keep it 0-0 the whole time. And Larson with the save. It was amazing. So, yeah, congrats to them. And the wrestling team, of course. We're going to have Spencer Linoska on in a short bit.
Right. That helps us transition to this week's Student Spotlight. All right, for this week's Student Spotlight, we have Spencer Linoska.
Hi, how you doing?
Yeah, state champion, Spencer Linoska.
Oh, yeah.
How was that, three?
Three times.
Three times.
Back to back.
Yeah.
Feels good. Feels real good.
Yeah, so great season. Congratulations to you guys and the coaching staff.
Oh, yeah.
And,
thank you.
Yeah, how was it, you know, going to state, traveling up there?
Unfortunately, it was in Shreveport. That's a five-hour trek you got to make. And then years prior, it had been at the River Cane Center in Baton Rouge, which if it would have been there this year, I think we would have had a crazy – we had a really nice student section up there this year, even though it was far away. But if it would have been close, like Baton Rouge, oh, we would have had so many people. It would have been nuts. Yeah. But it was awesome. It's so surreal, you know, all these years. You know, I've been doing this sport since I was like six. So it's just kind of culminated into these past two state championships, and it's been pretty sick. You know, I can't thank, you know, my teammates around me and my coaches enough, because without them, we wouldn't have been able to do what we did. And, yeah, I'm proud of us.
Yeah, again, like, congratulations. That was a big accomplishment. Everyone was proud.
I'm sure you still have that high from getting the state
champs. Oh, yeah, oh, yeah.
Still living off of that.
Oh, yeah. for sure. Even in my classes, too, I'll try to use that state championship excuse to get out of
it. So, like, which one of your, you know, you've went back to back to back. Which of the three was your favorite?
It's an easy question, but also a tough question because on one hand, winning it for the first time was awesome. But on the other hand, winning it last year was even crazier because my pin sealed the team championship. Yeah. So I think I'm going to have to go with that one because that was our first team title since 2009. And so we had that long gap and Jay's finally back on top after that pin, which it was crazy. It literally felt like a storybook. I can't even describe it.
Right.
Especially after I hit the roller coaster.
Yeah,
that was insane.
It was really like a move, like ending of a movie.
Like it felt like the credits were about to roll. It was insane.
And then, I saw a clip of you when you won this past state champ. You know, you were just like, yep, that's
you're
it.
You're getting the crowd hype.
Like,
yeah.
Just like, that's it.
I hit him with the hard hands. Yeah. hit him with the three time. And then I wound up reprising my roller coaster at the end again. So that was so sick. Always good to hit a little coaster.
What was it? I know, I guess for me, I've never really been to one of these tournaments. And I'm sure a couple of viewers out there haven't either. So could you go over like the process it is to go from entering the tournament through the doors to becoming state champion?
So you get there the day before just to, you know, get up there and feel good. Then the next day you weigh in. And, you know, the night before, if anybody has to get weighed off, they go take care of that. And luckily for us, we're a very disciplined team, so we don't really have to worry about weight a lot. But if you are over, you go get that done the night before. And then you weigh in. You got about an hour before you can start warming up after you weigh in. So you weigh in, you get all your fluids back in you, get some protein. And then you can't overload, though, because you got to weigh in the next day. So, and then you hit your warm up for about... 20 minutes, nothing crazy. And then about 40.
What do y'all have to do for warm-ups?
We hit a nice little jog, we stretch, and then a lot of it is just working on our moves that we know that we're good at, like each individual wrestler, like what each individual guy's good at, that's what they'll be working during warm-ups. And then after warm-ups, you got about 45 minutes before wrestling actually starts. And wrestling starts with, you know, lowest weight class to heaviest weight class, so we'll have guys, it's, you know... We have a guy in every weight class, so we always have somebody wrestling. And, you know, everybody kicks butt on the first day. And they go through the quarterfinals on the first day. So you have about three matches normally. So you have three matches. And then the next day, that's when the semis start. And you win the semis, and then you go to the finals, and then you stay champions. But what it really comes down to is getting those bonus point victories. And bonus points when you pin the guy... or you beat the guy by more than 8 points, or you tech the guy, which is like when you're winning by 15 points. And that's how you really win. That's how you get all those extra points because it adds to the team score. That's how you get the state championship.
Right.
Yeah, and then, I mean, you guys won it last year for the first time since 2009. Mm-hmm. And so how was the off season like knowing that, you know, you don't want to get, like, lazy and, you know, you want to go back-to-back? How was that like
so,
for the team?
Last year was kind of like the iffy year, like we could win, we might not win. You know, luckily for us, we pulled through and wound up winning it. But we knew the years after that, just was a done deal. Like nobody was going to be able to compete with us. And we trained that. We trained like champions too. And that's why we did what we did. We went undefeated in the dual season and kicked butt at the state tournament like we knew we were going to do.
Yeah.
And it's going to be like that for the next couple of years too.
So could you go over, without giving too much detail for the enemy teams listening out there, a little bit of like what do you do to train? Like during the off season and even like during you know, in between matches.
Yeah. So during the off season, so this year was different, right? I quit football and just dedicated myself entirely to this wrestling. And because I quit football, I was able to hit a lot of national tournaments that I wouldn't have been able to hit otherwise if I had been playing football. And I got to go against over 10 nationally ranked opponents and won a lot of those bouts, but also lost some. But those losses, you know, they helped me out more than anything because you get that experience and you learn from it. And that's really why I think in my high school career, I think this year has been my best year of wrestling. And but luckily for me, I think as a wrestler, I haven't even tapped into my like full potential. I think it's really going to be unlocked up at Navy when I get up there and I'm in a college room with dudes who have been wrestling for 30 plus years. So yeah, that's really my form of training is competition. And also, you know, when I'm in the room, Jackson Calderero, beast. Me and him, Griffin Ellis, beast. You know, Griff would have won state this year easily had I not been ahead of him. He's easily the second best heavyweight in the state behind me. And Jackson's an animal. Jackson's so good to the point where he'll take me down sometimes, and I get angry. I'm like, dang, took me down. But yeah, I have some of the best training partners in the state, and obviously Coach Hattie. He's been on here before.
Yeah,
he's the dude. Love Coach Hattie. So yeah, that's how I got to the way I am. With those guys.
Yeah, it's just a crazy ride, and we've been glad to like watch it, and especially like you know you're in the same class as us, so we've got to see guys. Yeah. You, Arthur, I'm leaving out a bunch of guys, but like all you guys, like, you know, evolve. And now, you know, you guys are the seniors this year and really, you know, cemented that Jesuit is here to stay.
Here to stay. Yeah. You know, I think wrestling kind of added on to the other sports because, like, I feel like when we were in eighth grade, when we were freshmen, sports at Jesuit were very dull and sad. We kind of got our butts kicked and everything. But now, you know, baseball's coming off. State championship, cross country's, you know, winning. Yeah. Basketball's, this is the best basketball team I've ever doing seen well. At Jesuit.
Yeah, swimming's doing good.
Swimming, always kicking butt. And, you know, wrestling kind of added on to that push of, you know, good sports teams. So, feels great.
Yeah, I know, right? We're kind of lucky because I was like, eighth grade was kind of a kinda lukewarm
rough.
Time.
Oh,
yeah.
that was
it's
rough.
A good time to be a J.
Right.
Yeah, it is a great time to great be a time, J. Yeah. And, eighth grade freshman year, that was super rough. Like to put it into perspective, like for wrestling at least, we came in 11th place when I was a eighth grader.
Yeah.
And the school that came in 11th place now is like some random school I can't even name. That's how bad it was. But
yeah, and two or three like year jump and we're state champs.
Yeah. Yeah, man.
It's insane. Actually insane.
Insane.
And how was it when you were shifting from? Coach was Coach Morin. He was the head coach before. Now it's Coach Aurelian. How was that shift? And like,
Coach Sheridan is an awesome dude and an awesome coach. I think it was just his coaching style that didn't really click with some of us. But when Jono came, Coach Sheridan kind of gave him the blueprint of, hey, you know, this is what you got to do with these guys. And Jono took that advice and added his own routine and how he handles kids and wrestlers, and really just brought it to the next level. And made us the way we are because the great thing about Jono is he knows what'll work for some of us and he knows what also won't work for a lot of us. So like there's some kids where you can, you know, you yell at them to get them in shape to, you know, get them moving. But there's other kids where you have to kind of be like, you know, kind of not soft, but you can't really take that tone with them.
Yeah.
And, you know, he knows that for every single one of us. And that's why we're so good because he's so close with us and he's just made us the best we can be. That's really so the change in coaching was kind of, it was an easy transition for us because Jono came in and he wanted to win and we wanted to win, so we got along really well.
I know you kind of mentioned it earlier, but what do you have for future plans going on with your wrestling career?
So this next year I'm gonna be up in Annapolis at the Naval Academy. I'm not technically gonna be enrolled at the academy this next year though. I'm gonna be living in the RTC house, which is like the regional training center. And so this next year is going to be real great because I'll have this year of I'll eat, sleep, wrestle this next year.
Yeah, straight wrestling.
I don't have to worry about
practice
school.
Practice on your game. your form.
Mm-hmm. I get to train. Navy has a really good heavyweight this year. I believe he's like number 14 in the country. So I'll have that mentorship. Plus the heavyweight coach, real awesome guy. He came down here the week before state. Got to show him around Noel a little bit. You got to meet the folks. And yeah, it's just so that this next year I think is going to be a real crucial year in my wrestling career, and I'm excited. Can't wait.
Yeah, I'm sure you are.
Yeah, man, we're praying for you. We hope you do great.
Yes, sir.
And I can't wait to, you know, look up at the TV. I'm like,
yeah,
I know that dude.
see him on clips on Instagram.
Right.
Yeah. Instagram reels.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it was great having you on the podcast,
yes,
Spencer.
Yes, sir. I'm happy to be here. Yeah, this was
congratulations
awesome.
Again. And yeah, good luck on your future.
Yeah, yes, good luck sir. In yeah. future wrestling.
Thank
yeah.
you, guys. Right.
Thank you.
Sweet.
All right, that was a great student spotlight from Spencer Linoska. Felt like it was great energy in that interview.
Right, yeah. I felt like I was part of the wrestling team Wednesday.
Yeah, so Jeremy, talk about Lent real quick.
Oh, yeah, it's the season of Lent, 40 days of fasting. It's also mission drive time.
Oh, yeah.
How about that?
Yeah, they've been promoting that a lot, the mission
drive. Right, the mission drive. Yeah. Very, very corny. It reminds me a lot of, you know, Pulse's puns.
Right.
You know, glad to know that he sticks the same character throughout all of his time. With the mission drive, there's a lot of events. I mean, every Friday they have the bread buffet.
Yeah,
you know, I tried it out last Friday, and hey, I mean, it was pretty amazing.
Yeah, you were looked like you were enjoying yourself with the bread.
I was like a bread connoisseur. I had maybe like five different types of bread. And
yeah, and also they got Krispy Kreme donuts going on at 10-minute break. So yeah. Feeling a little hungry.
The mission drive kind of helps keep us grounded because it helps us remind us that we're very fortunate being here, living here in New Orleans at Jesuit.
Yeah, very fortunate.
And, you know, there's a lot of people that are less fortunate than us in other places, and maybe not the faith doesn't reach them. So it's great to help, you know, people, to lead the people in less fortunate situations to, you know, a good spiritual place.
Yeah, so that was a... Yeah, so just contribute to the mission drive, and hope you guys have a good Lent. So, yeah, I think it's time to get into top three, huh?
Yeah.
All right. All right, it's time for top three.
This week's top three. What's our theme today?
Video games. Yeah, I'm hyped about this one. Me and you are. We love video games a lot. Yeah. So
we have thought long and hard about our picks this week, and
yeah, we took a lot of time to think about it, and I think we're ready to go. I'll start off with my top three, and my number three is gonna be The Last of Us. You know The Last of Us. I think everyone's knows The Last of Us, how big of an impact it had on story games, on PlayStation exclusives, and the story is amazing.
I actually never played it.
You never played it?
No, I never played it.
Oh, man. Jeremy, you need to play this game. It's just, you know, it's a zombie apocalypse, and you go on this journey with Joel and Ellie, and it tells a great tale about how humans are really...
Great tale.
The evil.
The problem.
Not even the zombies. Yeah.
Because, you know, the whole world's being overrun by zombies, yeah. But we're still at the center of the problem somehow.
Right. No, but overall, like, it was a really great game. I, like, going into it when I first played it, I always heard about it, but, you know, you might think, oh, it's going to be overrated. That left me in shock, that ending.
Till this day. I feel like it's overrated.
It has left me in shock.
So... Sell me on the game. I'm not convinced to play it.
Just play it for the story, because I know you love those impactful games, those impactful moments. And I mean, I can't even count how many impactful moments in this game that I'm thinking about right now. That I don't want to spoil on the podcast.
Mm.
But I mean, it's amazing. And the gameplay. You know, the game came out in 2013, but they had a remastered version. That's the one I played the original. And then I played the remastered version.
It was that good. You had to play it twice.
Yeah, no, really, it was. And I think you should get the remastered version, and because the gameplay is all improved, and you know, it's like The Last of Us Part Two. Like The Last of Us Part Two is one of the best like gameplay. Talking about gameplay, story is terrible.
Really,
but Part Two, yeah. But the gameplay is amazing.
So they like reverse roles.
Yeah. But yeah, The Last of Us, amazing story, amazing characters. You care for them. It's realistic. And I think the zombies were... There's one part...
You were scared?
In the hotel. I was scared. You were... Like, I played Resident Evil games. I played, like, Silent Hill and stuff like this. There, the hotel, that got me. That part got me.
You were shivering.
I was shivering. I had to turn on the lights for a second. But yeah, that's number three for me. Number two, it's going to be Batman Arkham City. Now...
Interesting.
I grew up with that game. I remember I played Arkham Asylum, and I told my dad, this is like 2012, I remember this. I told my dad I need to get Arkham City.
Already?
Yeah.
You knew?
Yeah, and I went out. Like, we went out,
like what, 6 years old?
What was I? Yeah. It's like, yeah, it was like crazy. I don't know. I was a bit too young.
Probably.
Yeah. But I remember we were going to like a bunch of GameStops, and they all didn't have it because like the game sold out. And I think like on the fourth of GameStop or something, like we finally found it. And when I got home, man, let me tell you.
What? Tell me.
This game, I don't even know how many hours I've put into it. It's one of like the greatest games of all time, in my opinion.
Why is it the greatest game
because
of all time?
Because I think you take Batman, and you know Batman with his rogues gallery, and there's so much stories you could tell. And this is like the first time, I think, that you're getting an open world Well, it's like, you know, you're one part of Gotham, basically. So let me go and get into it.
Yeah, please do.
Let me just do that.
Enlighten me. Why should I play this game?
Because Arkham Asylum pretty much shut down now, and they need somewhere to put, like, all the prisoners for now. They come up with, like, the idea of, like, just getting rid of, like, this one poor section of Gotham and just putting all the prisoners in there. And they just put, like, walls up and shut it down. And then basically, like, Bruce Wayne gets, like, taken in there while he was, like, doing a speech or something promoting it.
Mm.
And you're going in there and you find out this Protocol 10 that's going down. And this guy, Hugo Strange, is in charge of it.
Oh, not Hugo.
Yeah. and you basically just, it's like one night trying to take down all the bad guys and figuring out what Protocol 10 is. And then also the Joker. I think it's just amazing, like how the story is. How it all plays together. The boss fights are amazing. I think that game had like took advantage of what the characters it had. Like the Mr. Freeze boss battle is still maybe my favorite boss battle of all time.
Of all time. Wow.
I think just for its time too, it was really like ahead of it. Like I don't think a game is like games have tried replicating. Is that right?
Yeah, tried.
Games have tried replicating what Arkham City has done in all the Arkham games. But I really think Arkham City really started that trend of like, just like Spider-Man. You could see Spider-Man 2, the first one, took inspiration from it. But I think Arkham City, to this day, the story, the ending, that leaves an impact. It left an impact for me. I mean, there's kind of a trend with my top three. The endings are like crazy.
Right.
Yeah, but I think for a story game, and also the side missions, I could talk about it for... I don't want to spoil anything.
For all the people that want to go back to 2012 and play the game.
No, really. Is it
still like on stores?
Yeah. I saw it on PlayStation, like this PlayStation store. And but yeah, it's still like, for 2012. And they did a remastered for it, so if you want to. But still, it looks really amazing. And like the gameplay is amazing.
So, if you're a good Batman fan.
Oh.
Like us too.
If you're a Batman fan, how have you not played this yet? That's like, I think it's one of his best stories. Easily.
I remember I played the sequel to that, Arkham Knight?
Arkham Knight, yeah. The third one.
Arkham Knight was really good.
Have you played Arkham Origins?
Arkham Origins.
It wasn't made by Rocksteady, but in between when Rocksteady was working on Arkham Knight, I think Warner Brothers just put out Arkham Origins.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
Never played Arkham Origins.
I think it's like it's a good game. Like I think it's actually a good game what they did, but I think just the Rocksteady Arkham games are just...
It doesn't compare. Much more,
yeah. Because there's something. It's just
some magic. They put a little bit of love into it.
Yeah.
That was one of the ingredients. They did.
Yeah. So, yeah, that's my number two. Easily my number two. And it was number one for a long time.
Until?
And then came Red Dead Redemption 2.
Ooh.
To this day, it's been 2018. It's 2018, crazy.
Yeah.
Like, it's just amazing. I played, I got back
Six
on
years
it.
Ago.
Yeah, I got back on it last week because I knew we were doing this for the podcast. And the graphics, just that alone makes it like, I think,
great. It was a game far ahead of its time.
And you get it. You saw the map. You played it. Oh my God. Never seen a map that huge. And then like the detail they put in.
Yeah.
Like you can just be riding around and you get one person yelling out, "Oh, I need help." And then you just ambushed.
Yeah, you get robbed. Yeah. It's so many events that could just randomly happen.
That alone, yeah. Not even the story. Like that.
It was
roaming around.
I feel like it was revolutionizing to, you know, open world games.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you get games like Assassin's Creed and all that, but like...
Right, like Far Cry. Games like that where it's just like, it is open world, yeah. Story might be interesting, but it feels so bland.
Everything's dead, but not in Red Dead Redemption 2. Like, it's so lively, all the different cities and stuff. And let's talk about Arthur Morgan. I think he's the greatest written character in video game history.
Really?
And all,
I feel like he's the greatest protagonist.
Yes. I think he was written perfectly. Because a lot of people didn't like that they were changing up the main character from John Marston to Arthur Morgan. And me, I mean, I played it when I was young, but I didn't like.
I didn't play Red Dead Redemption first before. I went into it new. Arthur Morgan was the main character.
Yeah, and then wow, you start off not a good guy, not a bad guy. He knows he's not a good guy.
Yeah.
But then the journey he goes on, I think it's just. If you love movies, if you like just anything, I think
if you like anything,
if you like any stories,
yeah, and it's like, I'd say like the Wild West kind of genre of games is really like
underutilized.
That's exactly how I would put it.
Like you can make amazing.
So many good games out of that. So many good stories. Right. You know they did, like, maybe in the 50s and 60s, they went crazy with, like, Wild West movies.
Yeah.
But, like, ever since then, I haven't seen anything.
Yeah, and that's what Rockstar, I mean, you know, people talk about GTA, but I think Red Dead Redemption has been their best quality, like, storytelling, and their characters, every single one of them in the camp has a backstory, has something you can relate with, like, you care for them. Even, like, people like Dutch, you know, Micah. Like you can you understand how they are, why they are that way, and I think the journey you go on. It's a long game. It's worth it. I'm glad it's a long, you know, not rushed. There's different biomes, the different like areas.
Yeah,
you go
it's the map's like a United States, right?
Yeah, because you got New Orleans here.
Yeah, that was my favorite.
That was my favorite. Yeah, that was
going
amazing.
Through New Orleans to be like,
I'd be going crazy. And think you can customize all your guns, you can clothing, you can do so much, horses. It's like you can literally live there. I've seen people,
I would say that,
live in that game. Like it's crazy. But I think it's a must play game. If you even have like any interest in games, I think anyone would love this. It's not the gameplay, yeah, people might complain like it's too realistic, but I think it's perfect.
My top three, man. I've played so many good games in my time of video game history, I guess. But I would say the game that I put the most amount of hours into and I got the most amount of enjoyment was probably Black Ops 3 Zombies.
That's a good.
Even when I was like very little, me and my brother would be playing that at night, and like, dude, I would be so scared. I mean, like,
yeah.
I'd have to play with the lights on, man.
No, I feel you. Like when we were playing a couple months ago, I was kind of scared.
You know, yeah, just hearing the zombies coming around the corner.
Yeah,
and I remember like trying to play on my own, but I couldn't because I was just too freaked out. But anyway, that entire section of games, the maps were amazing, the memories were great, and they did this thing where they brought back a paid DLC with a lot of the hit maps from the other games. So like you got even the past maps too. So there's made like 20 maps you could play.
Yeah.
And I just had so many great memories. I played with so many friends over so many hours. It was absolutely amazing. I could go into hours into the lore.
Yeah, behind. The lore is like crazy.
It
long.
Is insane.
Like, yeah. You wouldn't expect that. And you don't even need a story for a game to like be amazing. It's just fun.
No.
Yeah.
And it's not like the lore is like pushing in your face.
No,
there's no like story. Like you could go and play like 5 minutes and not even know anything that's going on. But like you look on YouTube and you see like 12-hour videos explaining like part one. It's like
crazy. It's insane. But it shows you how big of an impact it had.
Exactly.
And
yeah.
To this day, yeah, I always hear people talking about it and how they missed that time.
Right.
Of zombies. But yeah, that's a good number three.
It really was a special time.
Yeah.
Number two, it would have to be Outer Wilds.
Yeah. That's
I know a lot of people probably haven't heard of it. And it's an indie game. And I don't want to say too much because this is a game that's perfectly suited to you want to go into it blind.
Yes, yes. Do not look it up, please.
Nothing. You don't want to hear anything about this game and just go into it blind. The entire story is amazing. The gameplay is amazing. And
yeah, tell them how you found it.
The ending was absolutely... It was life changing. I heard a couple lessons.
Really?
I gained a couple lessons about my life. Yeah.
I still haven't finished it. I'm like halfway through the game. I actually showed you the game.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. And I'm glad, Jeremy, really, it's the number two game of all time. That's huge.
Yeah.
So.
Send it here. We're at summer camp and we're working and you told me about this game.
Yeah.
What got my attention is that the setting for the game is in space.
Right.
And you find the spaceship, and there's maybe like six other planets, and there's no loading screens, like you said.
Mm-hmm.
You're stuck in this big simulation, and different things happen through. It's a 22-minute interval.
Yeah.
Different things happen, mm-hmm. And it's just absolutely amazing. I'd have to talk to someone who's already been in it in order to show my love for it.
No, yeah, go into it blind, because that's like, We were having fun with it,
mm-hmm.
And it's crazy. It's just no one talks about it, which is crazy.
No,
I think it's like
it's a hidden gem.
It really is.
It's a hidden gem.
Yeah, so that's a really good number too, going indie.
And for my number one, I would have to say Roblox.
Where's the JK?
What do you mean? Roblox is absolutely game. You know, part of my pun, but it was game changing,
really?
Right, to the entire industry back in like what, 2008? Why are you laughing?
You actually said Roblox. Like I was thinking, like, you know, at least Minecraft.
Roblox has made such an impact on
your life.
Not only my life, but my outlook on games in general. You know, it's punched through what we see as a game. You know what I mean? Does that make sense?
I actually don't know what you mean, you know.
It's, you do anything you want in Roblox. You know, I've seen, I can't even say some of the things that have been going on in Roblox. I mean, I know they have over thousands of games, you know.
And
in the main thing.
There's like only like two games that are probably like decent like out of the thousands of games. There's no way like that you've actually enjoyed like more than like five.
Okay, like, well, going into Roblox, there's like two levels of Robloxian enjoyers.
Oh, okay.
You got maybe like the base level. This is probably from like ages, you know, 8 to 12.
Okay.
Where, like, you go into Roblox and you just enjoy every game you play. Like, it's a bunch of flashing lights and like you just go crazy.
Yeah, right? dopamine hit. Yeah.
Yeah. And then you got maybe what I would like to call the Robloxian connoisseurs. People that have a fine taste.
There's no way. Did you listen to my top three? How like the quality of those games were, and how deeply loved they were.
What if I like quantity over quality?
Whatever you want, Jeremy. Whatever you want.
I'm saying because so many things could happen. I saw a Catholic mass in Roblox.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. You could do that, but like, is that what you want in a video game?
I've seen protests. I've seen movements started in Roblox.
All right, Jeremy. I mean, yeah, it's your life, man.
Yeah.
Roblox.
Right.
Good. That's a good number one. Good number one. You know what?
I might. You know, since you were laughing at my number one, I might have to go to my Roblox therapy group and
explain all this. Let me know how that goes.
You know, I don't think I will. You know, we're gonna be hitting /dance while we're while we're talking about your downfall and the games I think that they're superior to. The Almighty.
Have fun, Roblox. Man. I hope you enjoy Roblox while I'm, you know.
Yeah, while you're over games. There, while you're over there sitting bored, you know, with your thousands of hours of open world, free roam of, I don't know, a virtual desert.
You can do a lot in that. Like, you learn valuable lessons. You can learn how to do many things, unlike Roblox.
You know.
Where if you get hit by, like, one thing, your whole body just, like, you know, falls apart.
You know, some may find that very comedic.
Yeah. I do find it comedic. I find it, like, hilarious.
It's,
like,
the see, only thing, exactly.
That's the only good thing from the game.
It's provided so many great memories for you already.
All right, bro. All right. Guess that's our top three, huh?
Yes, I would say that is my top three, and I'm sticking by it, and I'm ready to fight anyone that may have any angry comments.
All right, you heard it here. Jeremy's number one is Roblox, and mine is Red Dead Redemption 2. Take that as you will. Yeah. Now it's time to get into our highly anticipated interview with Mr. Kernian.
All right, today we are joined with Mr. Kernian.
Yep. How you doing?
I'm great today, guys. How are y'all?
Great.
Pretty good. Pretty good.
Nice to get you on here.
Well, it's a great honor. Yeah. Our pride and joy of Jesuit High School.
Pride and joy, I don't know about that, but I do appreciate y'all having me on because this will be one of the last chances for y'all to have me on. So.
Right, we've climbed the ranks of Jesuit. We've reached the top.
So why don't you give yourself a quick introduction to the listeners?
A quick introduction. Okay, so I'm Peter Kernian, the principal here at Jesuit High School. Been here for 28 years now. Also an alumnus of the class of 1990, the great class of 1990. It's been a long haul here, but enjoyed it all. So it's been
You've had a long relationship with Jesuit.
Yes. So,
and you are, what's your future looking like going to be a principal?
Yeah, so I'll be moving on at the end of this school year. So over the summer, I will transition over to Stuart Hall School for Boys, about 2 miles down the street, which is an all-boys Catholic school, pre-K 3 through 7th grade.
Wow. So, yeah, we're glad to have you on here.
Well, thank you.
Before you go.
Yeah, I'm sure it's a bit emotional leaving the Jesuit career behind.
Yeah, no, it was at first a really tough decision, but... and it is. It's a kind of, I think bittersweet is the term that most people, you know, would use in this situation because I've loved working here. And I'd say for a while now, kind of thought I would end up retiring here one day. But this opportunity came along and I felt like it's something I should do. A new challenge and a new chapter for me in my educational career. So I think it's something I want to do. I think it'll work out for me, for Stuart Hall, and also for Jesuit with Jeremy coming in and taking over as principal next year. So I think it's a situation that's kind of going to work out for everyone.
All right. So, you know, let's start all the way back when you were attending Jesuit. And you were really big in cross country and all that. So go back, give us like, you know, breakdown of like...
Bring us back into the time machine.
Right.
Tell us how it is.
Yeah, no. So, I was in eighth grade here, I ran cross country my eighth grade year, and I wasn't bad. I was pretty good. I realized I could, you know, could be pretty good at that if I wanted, but I wanted to play basketball. So I'm one of those guys who went out for the basketball team and then got cut as an eighth grader and then realized, okay, so basketball isn't going to work out. That whole thing isn't going to happen for me. So I'll just... put all my efforts into running cross country and track and certainly don't regret that at all. I enjoyed doing it thoroughly. Made a lot of good friends. Enjoyed working with the coaches that I worked with and actually led me to go on to run in college as well. So it was ended up being a good decision for me. So, and also when I graduated from Jesuit, I was the same height I am right now, about 6'1", and I weighed 128 pounds. So, you know, usually a basketball player in the paint. 6'1" is nice, but the 128 is not. So.
You think you you wish you tried out again? But, you know, if you.
No, I don't. I think not making it that year just kind of made me realize just how much I did enjoy running cross country. Okay. And then, you know, I ran track that spring and really enjoyed it, and just thought, you know what, this is what I'm going to do. This is I can see myself getting involved in this and really getting into it over the next 4 years after that. So that's what I did. No regrets at all. I think if I had somehow made basketball, I probably would have sat the bench the entire time. So
yeah,
yeah, you probably would have had a less fun time than tracking cross country.
Absolutely.
What events did you run in track?
So in track, I ran. Well, technically, I was a distance runner, which the real distance events are the mile and the 2 mile. But I also ran the 800. No, it wasn't too bad at that. And then track athletes, at least back then, were also famous. The sprinters were famous for, by the time we got to the 4x4, which is the last event, they either their hamstrings hurt or something was up, and they couldn't run the 4x4. So they knew I was willing to just do anything. So I often found myself running on the 4x4 as well, even sometimes after running the 2 mile right before that race. But enjoyed doing it. Had a lot of fun running all four of those events.
Do you have any big major achievements from your time of running back then?
Major achievements. So there's one little known fact. So there used to be an event run in indoor track in the state of Louisiana called the 1,000-meter run.
Okay.
And I believe my senior year is the last year that this event ever was run in the state of Louisiana. And so as a result, I do own the school record for the 1,000-meter run.
Wow.
Certainly, if the event were resumed, the event, most of the runners on today's team would probably destroy that record. But because it isn't run, it sits there in the books.
Wow.
He holds some records.
Congrats.
Yeah.
Your name will live on forever in Jesuit history.
I think I also might have been on a relay record for a long time as well. I don't remember which one, but I know that within the last 2 or 3 years, it was removed by this current group of runners, which certainly they're much better than what we were doing back in our day. So
does it suck when someone like breaks your record, or it's like,
for me, no, not at all.
Yeah.
I certainly know my limitations and know just how good I was, and certainly many of the runners today are much better than I was. And but it was fun achieving a record at the time. But you know, most people say, and I kind of agree, records are meant to be broken. So it's great that somebody did that.
Right. Yeah. The runners that we have on the teams this year are just absolutely insane.
Yeah. Yeah,
the past couple of years, it's been amazing.
Really good run so far. So hope they keep it going.
Didn't make no Valis Cry documentary for nothing.
Right.
That's right.
Well, let's get into, how did you get into, coming back to Jesuit after you graduated and finished college?
Okay, yeah, no. So I finished college in 94 and actually initially went to work in a printing company the man who became my father-in-law, I went and worked for him for a period of time at a local printing company. But I had a former coach who was working at Brother Martin reach out to me to see if I was interested in going to Brother Martin and teaching and coaching there. And so I went ahead and did that and really enjoyed the year that they're doing of being a teacher and a coach. And as luck would have it, Mr. Villarubia, who was then the English department chair, reached out to me to see if I'd be interested in coming to teach here at Jesuit. So I did one. I taught for 1 year at Brother Martin and then moved over here to my alma mater. And I guess the rest is history. I never left. So really enjoyed the time here. Coached for a number of years, coached cross country and track for a number of years and taught English. Did both of those all the way up until I became principal 11 years ago. So really enjoyed doing that.
How'd you climb the ranks to become from teacher and coach to principal?
It's interesting. As soon as I started teaching, I did start working on my master's. I just always felt like you should work on another degree. Certainly my father pushed me to do that as well. Felt that, an advanced degree was an important thing. So I said, okay, well, I'll get a degree in education administration. It seems interesting. I did that. And then after teaching here for a year and a half, the then principal, Mr. Neuberger, asked me if I'd be interested in being an assistant disciplinarian, the same role that Mr. Armland plays now. I did that, and I learned how to do the scheduling, which is what Ms. Swan does with creating all the schedules each year for all the students. So I got involved in doing those things and enjoyed it. And a few years later, became an assistant principal here, did that for 12 years. Probably really never thought much about being a principal, honestly, until Hurricane Katrina. During Katrina, I did a lot of work with scheduling and helping set up the school in Houston. And then setting up the school here in Metairie at St. Martin's at night. And that's when kind of leading those efforts kind of thought, you know, maybe I could see myself doing that one day. So, and then as luck would have it, several years later it worked out. So.
All right.
I know you mentioned Katrina, which was a big hit for Jesuit. Yeah. I mean, us today in the school, we'd never experienced that.
Correct.
So what was it like being, you know, in a position of high responsibility during that crazy time?
Yeah, it was interesting in that, it's, you know, no one really thought about it on the front end. It's just something that happened overnight. You know, this, and the next thing I knew, I found myself going to Houston. Father McGinn, the then president, asked me to come to Houston to help out. We thought we'd have 20 to 40 students going to Strake Jesuit in Houston. The next thing we knew, we had 200 students showing interest. So we had to set up our own night school. And it's one of these things where I never really thought much about it. I just found myself fully involved in scheduling all the classes for the students, setting up, you know, the schedule for the night school. And then just kind of leading the effort, calling people and getting them to come teach there. And I just kind of end up by default sort of running the whole thing without thinking much of it. It just kind of happened. It's one of these things, when we look back on it now, there are a lot of fond memories from that time, as much as there was devastation, a lot of problems for people. But I think the time we spent together, the work we all did together, is something that a lot of us, I know, look back on with a lot of fond memories. Really enjoyed that time as much as you can. And at the time it was very hectic, pretty stressful, but again, an experience in the end that of all of us coming together to work to kind of keep Jesuit going. And I think we're all very proud of that and really enjoy doing it.
Yeah, and in another chaotic time, which was much recently, and we were here for it, when COVID happened. And so, yeah, how did you navigate that when it popped up?
You know, first of all, I do want to mention back, with Katrina, you know, certainly it is a lot of help. It's not like I certainly didn't do this by myself.
Oh, yeah,
a lot of people pitching in and volunteering and sacrificing to make it work. And I'd say the same thing happened with COVID. Unprecedented. Nobody really knew what we were going to do when it happened or how long it would last. There's no playbook for these things. So again, just really thinking it through, trying to make what we believe were the best decisions for the school, for the students going forward. We also knew that whatever decisions we made, everyone was not going to agree with them, unfortunately COVID became a very political, I think from our standpoint, a very political issue. And people felt very strongly about wearing masks, not wearing masks, you know, getting a vaccine, not getting a vaccine, and all the different rules. And we were just basically trying to follow what the CDC was setting down for us, with the biggest priority being we wanted our students here on campus. And so if that meant they all had to wear masks, then they were all going to wear masks because we wanted to be here on campus. We knew that was what was best for our students in the end. So, but it was tough. It was, you know, a lot of unhappy parents, a lot of phone calls, a lot of, people expressing their dissatisfaction. But then also, I think toward the end, especially, a lot of people then really reaching out and thanking us for the work that we did and doing things the way that they did it. So in the end, I feel pretty confident that we did about as good a job as could be done during that time. And I'm pretty satisfied with it overall. Certainly not happy that it happened, but feel like we did what we could.
Yeah, it was a pretty crazy time. And
right, like you said, there's no, like, perfect this hasn't really happened in a long time before, so just given the situation, throwing the sharks.
Yep. And a real interesting aspect of it was, so the class of 2020, those are the seniors who, you know, we all went home in March. I think March 13th was the day that
infamous
we all
day.
Right after
we all
exams.
Went home. Yes, right after exam week. And all the decisions about, so the seniors didn't have their last quarter and they didn't have their prom and their last day and those sorts of things. And they didn't have the traditional graduation. They didn't graduate until July, but a lot of unhappy parents at the time of those students. But I happened to be a parent of one of those students of the class of 2020. So I always felt like, as much as I'm not happy for my son that he would hit, that was the end of his time here, it made it interesting in terms of the parents realizing that I was kind of in it with them. Mm-hmm. During that time. So the things we were doing, certainly I wasn't happy with them either, but we were going to do the best that we could given the circumstances. So.
Yeah, I think, there's no perfect way to go about it, and you just got to do it.
Did your best.
Yep, yeah.
On a lighter note, heard you from a source that you are a big fan of Taco Cabana.
Yes, I'm starting to realize who your source is on most of this. Certainly one of my former runners, Mr. Flores. But yes, Mr. Flores is a part of that Katrina cross-country team. And yes, while I was in Houston, I don't know how it got started. It got started with the first night. I stopped at Taco Cabana on the way home, and then it became a thing. And our school didn't let out till 10 o'clock at night. And me and some other administrators, the numbers grew. We would, and teachers, we would stop at Taco Cabana every single night on our way home.
Wow.
Yeah. They had a big discount for Louisiana residents during that time, and we took advantage of it.
What was the order? Your special order that you got?
You know, I tried a lot of different things. I didn't just stick to the same order every time, but it's mostly tacos. I went with the tacos. Yeah.
That was your favorite?
Oh, yeah, I'm a taco guy. I certainly went with the steak tacos was probably my number one order.
And did you get tired of it? Like if you see a Taco Cabana?
No, I didn't.
Anywhere?
What you would think? I would think I would. You know, but I've always said, you know, some people say, "Oh, I could eat pizza every day or something." But I've always said I feel like I could eat Mexican food almost every day, and I do so a lot. And I did every night for I don't know, probably about, I guess I was there about 2 months.
Wow.
So
yeah, that's a lot.
I had
that's
to
a lot of
come back
that's
home.
Dedication.
Yes,
wow.
Yeah.
Yes. Every night. Also put on a lot of weight during that time.
Yeah.
During Katrina, yes.
I'm sure. Not much to do during that time, yeah. But any Mexican places like around here? New Orleans?
Yeah, you would recommend?
Yeah.
I mean, I don't want to get myself in the trouble, you know, recommending one over. No, but I like them all. I'm not real picky. You know, hell, I even hit Taco Bell from time to time. But there's a new one, a restaurant that opened up right over there off of Airline, Las Cruces, I believe is how it's pronounced. And it's I've been there a few times. Enjoy that. It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
Yeah.
All right, gotta try it.
Yeah,
out.
We might have to check it out.
Yeah.
So these were picked in no bias.
Yeah.
Just rank these in any particular order, of your favorite artist of these three: Green Day, Tom Petty, and Cowboy Mouth.
Of those three,
yeah.
Okay, I guess Peter Flores is trying to think back to people I liked back then. So of those three, I'd probably go with Tom Petty.
Tom Petty.
The late, great Tom Petty, yes.
What was your favorite song by him?
Oh, man. I'm sure one of the most popular ones is Free Falling. That might be my favorite of them all, but I do, there are just too many for me to pick. Refugee is another big favorite of mine, but... American Girl, you know that I could go on. I don't know. One, if I had to pick one, though, I'd probably pick Free Fall.
Yeah, that's a good album.
It's a classic.
Yeah,
that whole album. That's the album when I started listening to. That's Full Moon Fever. That is the album when I started listening to Tom Petty. It is one of my favorites. It's one of those ones I put on and I listen to it from start to finish without skipping any songs.
Yeah, that's a no skip album.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's kind of a broad question, but what would you say was your most proud moment of your entire time at Jesuit?
Ooh. Yeah, I don't. That's a tough one. There's been a lot of enjoyable moments for me. In terms of accomplishments or feeling pretty proud about something, I have to say I did when all the dust settled on Katrina, after rescheduling all those schools and setting them up and all that sort of thing. I felt pretty good about that. I felt like I'd really accomplished something when I finished that. It was pretty tough on family life, you know. When I went a long time without seeing my wife and kids, and they were very young at the time. They were 3 and 1, and they were not in Houston with me. And even when I came home to set up the night school, I was really never at home between setting up the school and working. And it was so from that standpoint, it was tough. But in the end, I do look back on that as feeling like that was a pretty, I put in a lot of time and effort and didn't count the cost, just kind of went through the process and felt good about that. So I do think that was, if I had to pick one from as objective as I can be, I'd say it's probably the work I did during Katrina.
Yeah, and are there, during your time here, are there any notable characters that you've worked with that you like to shout out?
Characters that I've worked with? That's a tough one, because it depends on how somebody wants to interpret the term character, but I'm going to pick a few people that taught me and I've worked with, who I think are characters, but also just maybe interesting people. And, you know, one is Mr. Levee, stands out.
Yeah, classic.
He's an amazing teacher. Amazing.
Yes, he was my senior analysis teacher, and I also worked with him for a number of years. Mr. Powers is another one, you know, retiring this year, but Mr. Powers taught me when I was a student here, and it was a big help to me starting as an English teacher, really worked with me. Kind of acted. We didn't have a mentor program for teachers back then, but I'd say he probably acted unofficially as my mentor, and he's another one. I think he will be missed. With those bow ties have been worn for for 40 plus years here, and he's done a great job with in the English department. So those are two people that jump out at me. There are tons of people I can name. That's what I hate about naming people. I'm leaving people off, but you know, there's still a number of people here that I've worked with for so many years, and have been such a big help to me. You know, worked very closely with Ms. Juhas for the last, you know, what would that be, probably 23 years. We were assistant principals together, and then she's continued in that role since I've been principal. Mm-hmm. So a lot of people around here that have been very interesting and very helpful during my time. So,
and kind of a theme that we've always asked, like, any guest is, what is, like, your kind of your routine, like your morning routine, like how you go about your day?
My morning routine specifically is, yes, I am a routine-oriented individual. I get up at 4:40 exactly every morning.
Wow.
Jeez.
And I go work out at Planet Fitness.
Oh, nice. Okay.
Yeah. I used to run a lot, but I had knee replacement surgery, so I can't run anymore. Mm-hmm. So now I'm into the elliptical. So I do the elliptical every morning. I go home. I have one cup of coffee. I watch the news for a little while, take a shower, and then come to work. And that is that does not change.
Every single day, that is
my routine.
Wow. So, what time do you go to bed? Waking up at 4 a.m.
Well, that depends. It's I mean, usually it's probably around 10 o'clock.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty good. Just get everything done in the morning.
Yeah.
And then, yeah. Do you celebrate Christmas or any festivities? Anything like any of your favorite holidays?
Yes, of course I celebrate Christmas, but probably what your information you might be referring to is on December 23rd every year is another big holiday, which is Festivus.
And, yeah.
Festivus.
I heard about that from our source.
He mentioned it.
Yeah, Festivus for the rest of us is the saying. But no, I have an aluminum pole that I put up every year. And on December 23rd, we celebrate Festivus with the airing of grievances and the feats of strength and such. So that is definitely a tradition in our family for many years now. Yes.
I've personally never heard of Festivus.
Never heard of Festivus.
No, I don't know. I don't know what that is.
No, it was started by Frank Costanza many years ago. So if you're familiar with Seinfeld, that is where you would learn about Festivus.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So I don't know if you guys, you know, it's an older show, but
I see some clips now and then.
Yeah, it's worth the watch.
Yeah.
There was a period of time in my life where I watched Seinfeld a lot. I don't really watch as much, but all these lines and information from it are still stuck in my head. So a lot of Seinfeld references. If you're in a meeting with me, there will be Seinfeld references. And I can tell who watched the show and who didn't, because some people will kind of chuckle or smile and others have no idea what reference I'm making. So,
what are some of your funniest, like, or like your favorite lines or moments from Seinfeld?
Oh, lines. There are a ton, but you know, some that stand out when George pretends to be a marine biologist to impress a girl, and finds himself out at the beach with her with a beach whale. So he has to go out and pretend to be a marine biologist, and remove the obstruction from the blowhole, which is Kramer's golf ball that he was hitting. He's hitting golf balls into the ocean. So that's a great moment. It's probably one of my favorite scenes from the show. That stands out. Certainly, probably more than any others, but I mean, there are tons of them. Almost anything with George and all the craziness that goes on in his life.
Yeah, my dad was a big Seinfeld fan, and you know, every now and then he has it on TV, and you know, I sit down and watch him.
Yes.
Have you picked up any lines?
No. I'm not. I haven't really delved into the Seinfeldness. Yeah.
Now, I guess the line I use the most is when somebody tells me about something. Obviously, it's got to be someone that I know is telling me about something that's gone on that's you know, certainly not terrible, but not great. Something that, you know, you can't believe what happened to me. And then my response always would be, that's a shame.
So, just shrug it off.
That's a shame, because that's pretty much what Jerry says to everybody. Oh, that's a shame.
All right.
do you have any advice or new tips coming up for the new principal, Mr. Ruther?
Well, look, obviously, I don't think there's anything I could say in a nutshell that would do it all, you know, for anybody. But and Mr. Ruth and I are meeting regularly, and there's a lot of transition taking place. But I think the biggest thing is that one of the biggest pieces of advice that I got that certainly has rung true over the years is that you can't please everyone. You know, you're going to have to make decisions, and sometimes they'll be unpopular, but ultimately you have to do what's best for the school, what you think is going to be best for the students and for the school. The real thing is what you have to realize in the end with all the meetings and the hiring and all the work that goes on, balancing budgets and making out budgets and those sorts of things, is in the end, it's really all about the students. And if you kind of remember that and you don't forget that and think whatever decisions I make need to be in the best interest of the students, I don't think you can go wrong in the end. Might be some people aren't happy with certain decisions, but if that's sort of your beacon out there is that, hey, what is best for the students here at Jesuit High School? In the end, you can't go wrong.
Some good advice, yeah. Even for us little people.
Yeah, if we take some leadership roles in the future. But I heard some rumors that you are leaving because this is the best graduating class, and you just
right,
you can't carry on.
The class of 24.
Us. Yeah, well, that certainly played into it. The class of 2024 is just, I don't think it can ever be topped.
No,
so,
I don't think so.
You know, they always say you want to go out on a high note, right? You want to go out right. a champion. So I feel that way by going out with the class of 2024. I'm certainly right. going out, with the best class. It certainly can't get any better, right?
Look at that. Well, the honor
no,
that we have.
No here. Objections for me.
Yeah, no.
You heard it here.
I love that answer. I'll take it. But, yeah, thank you for coming on, Mr. Kernian, and having you on before you finish your time here at Jesuit. And, yeah, just great time.
Yeah, thank you for coming on. It's been been a pleasure.
Thank you. I appreciate it. I've enjoyed it as well.
Yeah, any last words?
Any last words? Nothing comes to mind other than, keep plugging along, work hard. And I think everything usually, as people always make fun, I always say when things are going bad, I like to say, everybody calm down, everybody relax, it's all going to work out. So keep that in mind as you go through life. Yeah. All right.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate Bye. It. All right. That was a great interview with Mr. Kernian.
I mean, I absolutely love his story about his time at Jesuit. And I'm really excited to see where he goes off in the future.
Yeah, I'm glad.
So best of luck to him. And
yeah, I'm glad we got to get him on before he left, so I feel accomplished now.
Right, as I said in the beginning of the episode, make sure to go to www.thebluejay.news to check out this week's podcast. Maybe add a couple questions for our next feathery friend that we're going to have on the podcast. So anyway, that just about wraps up our episode. I mean, I had a lot of fun.
Yeah, that was a great episode. So, yeah.
Until next time.
Go Jays.